Let's get started. And thanks everybody for joining us, including our chatbot, who's got strong attendance, honorary task subcommittee member.
I think he just hurt the AI's feelings by calling it a chatbot, you know.
Oh, what is it? Chat, I don't know.
ChatGPT is not ChatGPT. Yeah.
I also gendered it. I mean, that's terrible. I don't know. I'm moving on. These meetings do sneak up on me, for as much as I am glad that we have them scheduled. And thanks everybody for joining. I don't know that we've had as much of our subcommittee on as we would have liked, but I'm really glad that we've got this core group that attends. And our work is really demonstrated in a worksheet that went out this morning in preparation for tomorrow. We have the most recommendations of any. So, Mike, I think that means we're winning, if that's how to judge it. But, I think we want to take this morning just check in and see where things are at. Maybe we can review the 32 recommendations that we've got so far, and see what's missing, or we can talk more broadly about kind of where we're at. I'm worried that we're missing something in being strategic in our approach. I'm worried that we're not being strategic in our approach, that we raced into, like, here's a long list. And all the other pieces that go along with actions, are the pieces I want to be talking about, goals and timelines and who's doing what. And I still feel like we're missing so much. And we've talked within the subcommittee about here's gaps in knowledge that we want to fill. Even as we're populating the spreadsheet with a long list of actions. So maybe we could talk about that too as a group. Isaac, how are you feeling? And anything, I know this spreadsheet just came out this morning, but any thoughts from where we've been or where we're headed?
Again, I agree that we're clearly winning. I agree with that assessment, Daniels. Joking aside, I think that I wanted to make sure that the group was aware that we had sent out an email to our portfolio company, The Launch Alaska, to ask for their input. And I am curious to see what kind of ideas that they come back with, which may help with some of your feeling like we're missing something or feeling like maybe we're not being strategic enough. I'm curious to see who gets back to us and what kind of feedback, because a lot of those folks are at the center of trying to develop projects in the state. Also, one of our earliest conversations that we had was about thinking about a way to structure the subsidies and incentives into almost two groups. So we think about what's the current system and what are the current incentives and subsidies that we want to pursue or currently enjoy in the current system, and then also thinking about, okay, if we're moving to this new system, what are the current subsidies that need to exist in that new system? And because I think there are opportunities in that new system that we just can't explore in the current system. So I don't know. I think that is always in the back of my mind and is a way to frame the strategy here a little bit and kind of wrap my head around what things are available to us now, but what things we would like to have available to us if we just gaze around the corner a little bit and look at the future. I'm really excited about all the input that folks have given already, and I think we have some really good stuff on here. I think it's a really good initial list of recommendations. Would be good maybe before today's meeting to or the end of today's meeting, if I could suggest an agenda item, is just to clarify our deliverables between now and our due date, and when we need to actually have materials. Do we need a draft to circulate? Do we need to have put this in a Word doc? And I'm a little clear on what the materials are that we need to produce by the due date, and I just want to maybe get clarity on that. If I don't have clarity, I imagine there are other folks in the subcommittee might not have total clarity also on what we actually need to produce and by when. So, yeah.
Yeah. And maybe, I mean, I feel like I'm always in the same boat, losing track of where we're headed. So, Michael, could you speak to that? And maybe it's something to include on the agenda, too, like, hey, we're all focused on October 10th, and here's what you need by then, or I don't know what. But remind us where we're at and where we're headed.
So the overall, like, the final deadline is still November 17th. In the task force meeting tomorrow, we do have the kind of the calendar highlighted that was presented, at the start of this. I know one of the discussion points at the task force meeting coming up tomorrow is there's conflicts for certain meeting dates coming up, and they're looking at kind of changing some of those dates. So I think that's going to be a discussion topic that they're going to, have tomorrow, as far as the calendar. As far as what you need to prepare, I think the tracking sheet is kind of our roadmap. Once we kind of narrow down the these are the actions, Michael Baker can help kind of formalize and format the report and say, hey, we need some descriptions or a little more information related to some of these actions. We can kind of have a more formalized roadmap of when that is. We're getting closer to the finish line, obviously. I think one of the things the task force just needs to do is kind of nail down the upcoming meeting dates and some of those changes that they need to discuss tomorrow. So I'm hesitant to throw out exact dates.
Is it a report is the deliverable, or is it the spreadsheet? Are you drafting a narrative? Are there policy considerations or background or research that goes into that? What does that look like?
So when we did the kind of the brainstorming, the art of the possible, I kind of laid out little design vignettes of different sections of the report. The end of this is going to be a plan that's going to be a high-level report that may have appendices, and the appendices may be kind of that detailed tracking sheet. Typically for a comprehensive energy master plan, that's kind of a two-year time horizon to produce that. So this is going to be more of kind of an executive-level kind of presentation of, the actions that were identified, and then we might go into a little further detail of the priority actions that are going to, be focused for kind of the state legislature to take beginning of next year. That's how the discussions I've had with Curtis, that's kind of how we envision it, just given the timeline and the constraints.
And I believe, really what the governor's intent was at the beginning of this is to identify those policies, those actions that he could encourage legislation be drafted for.
Yeah.
And I was going to say, we just expect those actions where he could take immediate action. There's already, been research, due diligence. They've already been kind of advanced far enough along that they can take action. And then, some of these longer term actions may require future due diligence and work. And, this really should be seen as a living document. So that's one of the questions is, what form is the task force or this work going to live on after this? And that may be a recommendation that needs to get formalized through this. As a task force, not necessarily the subcommittee.
Mm-hmm. Okay. All right. So November 17th.
Is the final, yes. And then they would want, I think it was like a 29-day like comment period, so we may have to have a draft prior to that.
Okay. So do you mean 29 days before the 17th we'd want to have a draft out there?
So that's part of the schedule. It's a little unclear to me, but I know that they've created these 29-day kind of review windows, and I'm not sure how set in stone that 29 days is, but I do know that there should be a public review before the plan is finalized.
That's going to be real critical to know for backwards planning. If we're thinking drop-dead date for the executive summary and all the taskings are November 17th or October 16th, that's a 30-day difference.
Yeah, which would mean we would need to have our work wrapped up by kind of, you know, end of September at the latest in order to incorporate it with the other subcommittee's work, right? To have it available by October 18th.
Even then, I have been through a few of these processes where we keep aiming for the public comment period at the end and then leave us a day to incorporate public comments. Like that's not how feedback should work, I think, as part of this process. So you really want that public comment period to come far enough in advance of your deadline that you can actually do something with the feedback. And you want, cause it's all going to have to come back to us to review, to incorporate or not. And go from there.
I tend to agree with that. And I encourage you to kind of note that task force meeting tomorrow when they discuss the schedule, because, you know, the consultant, we can only make recommendations, but I think it's the governor's office and then the vice chairs kind of set the initial schedule.
Yeah. Of course, Penny's paying attention to actually what we've said in the past, so thanks, Penny.
Yeah.
I
mean, there's a schedule that was listed in one of the past slides. I'm trying to see if I can share the link, but it had very specific dates. But
I'm sure.
It did.
Sounds like that was very flexible.
Just so you know that specific slide they're going to pull up and discuss, what some of the meeting dates if they need to adjust them.
So the goal is, and I'm hearing, is this is executive high level that we're going to put out to the public. It's executive high level recommendations that is going to be left after the task force is over for the governor, his staff, and his direction for legislative or whatever to flesh in. I mean, we got to give a core. But this is a high-level executive document that we need to give to the public. I'm looking at the deliverable that's going to the public in September or where we're at.
On a whole, yes. And then if there's priority actions that are further advanced that have more detail, we can definitely include that. But overall, I would say keep it executive high-level.
And so,
go ahead.
I guess I'm wondering a little bit about the approach across all of the subcommittees or across the whole task force to prioritization, because we have a lot of recommendations on our, in our group, and I think many of them are good, or all of them are good, and we could prioritize this in different ways. Like we could say we're going to prioritize ones that are most feasible to get done in the next year, or we could prioritize things that are most impactful, kind of swinging for the fences and would have the largest impact and getting us down to that, 10-cent power for Alaskans. So I'm wondering, is there any rule of thumb or consensus emerging across the task force and within the subcommittees for how to do that prioritization? And is it I also am looking at what I'm hearing is try to find the top 3 to 5, and I don't think that really works for our group. Like, I think there's a lot in our recommendations I want to leave in, and I wouldn't want to restrict us down to just 3 to 5 in our final recommendation list. So I'm just wondering if there's any guidance you can offer, Michael, on how to approach that. Prioritization and winnowing down, any thoughts you have to share?
So there's no consensus necessarily on, prioritization. It's one of the reasons I think this was structured to have the 3 different regions, because they would have different priorities. What we focused on was the timeline for implementation, and let that kind of be one of the first kind of drivers for prioritization. That we did have a priority column for on the sheet, and then we just took it, hit it, because we recognized there isn't anything decided yet.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
Yeah, I would just like to add in here. I think we're limiting ourselves. If let's say we have 8 or 9, and trying to winnow this down, I think that exercise is not productive, in the sense that if they're all good ideas and they're all impactful, they're all good. I do agree with, you know, looking at a spectrum of impact or a spectrum of another criterion of where they may rate, but I don't see us winnowing or limiting in my perspective. I don't think that's what we're requested to do. Is kind of like, what is the world of possible and what are the suggestions for us to take us out, you know, 50 or 100 years or wherever we want to visualize it. I just get tied up when people say, give me your top 3 or give me your top 5 when you have 9 good ideas or whatever, you know. I just want to caution against that prioritization.
Yeah, I'm the same way, Duff, and I also think that it's worth keeping in mind how this task force started, with the governor really pushing us to do something that is on the edge of impossible, and, you know, it's very ambitious and it's very transformative to even think of getting to 10-cent power in Alaska. And so it does seem like, you know, that sets its own kind of, you know, framework for how we prioritize things. And we might want to think about somehow calling out any of our recommendations that we feel like would have the largest input. Because I think one thing that is easy to do with a task force like this is we fall into just kind of, you know, incrementalism. The actions that we suggest at the end are just small kind of tactical baby step improvements or baby step, you know, suggestions. But if I understood what the governor is asking for, it was really like a deep, think deeply about, you know, if we could really make some huge strides forwards, what are those kind of big, ambitious, bold ideas? And I'm not sure how much of we're seeing that across the task force, and I think we should push ourselves to think in those terms, not just like incrementalism and, you know, changes around the margin, but really trying to push forward the ideas that are a little bit more transformational.
You know, this is one of the first times that they're distributing a sheet with all of the actions from the subcommittees. This might be a good time, you know, to have that discussion at the task force tomorrow at the roundtable discussion.
Okay, yeah.
This has been a good conversation. I'll turn back to that worksheet. If that's okay, I'm going to share my screen and pull that up, if Michael, if you don't mind.
Yeah, I do. Niels, I do want to offer that spreadsheet, the Excel sheet, is actively online on the SharePoint site of the task force, and we can, while you're talking and reviewing it, if there's any changes, we can make it real time.
Great. It might be doing that. I don't know. You can see that okay?
Yes.
So right now we've got our list, and our list is actually only 10 long, and I know we talked last week about some of these being probably more appropriate under the statutes and regulations, so we might have to call this further or send it that way so that they can pick it up elsewhere. But I wanted to, the thing that expanded our list was the addition of the SEDS actions, which I don't know. I mean, I don't know that I that half or more need to be on here. So maybe we could work through them. I think attracting private co-investment is, that's easy, but I don't know that the description really does describes what we're trying to achieve, focused on the natural gas pipeline and export. So for the group, can we refine the action description to have it be about project broadly that reduce costs? Is that reasonable?
I would agree with that. I think when I was reading this earlier, it's primarily attracting private co-investment is a big chunk, but we have a diversified energy portfolio in Alaska that could help reduce to 10 cents. So it's all of the above. But I mean, whoever drafted that was obviously thinking natural gas, but it could also be attracting private co-investment and transmission in other energy sources, hydro, wind, solar. So I think that's a good call, Nils.
And Nils, I was just going to offer, we've gone through this exercise with, two subcommittees so far, and Duff was one of them that participated. We either can withdraw actions from consideration if they don't align. We can combine them with, other actions that already exist, or, you can add them. Or obviously reword as we just did here.
Okay. Great. Natural gas R&D, again, coming from a different part of the set, focused on hydrogen for world markets, in the long term. Is this a incentives and subsidies recommendation or action? Does this belong here?
The other thing I would offer is that these recommendations came from a larger economic development plan, if you will, right? So we just pulled these out to see if they got any traction with various subcommittees, but I think the SEDS group was really looking at overall economic development in Alaska, right? And so these are the energy recommendations that came out of that.
Yeah. And our plan doesn't have to be the same as their plan. So it's okay for it to be, think of different and very specific, to incentives and subsidy. I mean, in terms of our subcommittee role.
Do that.
Duff, are you? Cool. Saying something, or Isaac?
Yeah, I got a question on this one. I know there's nations like, Japan is investing billions of dollars on how to use hydrogen, and I don't know how our limited resources are on R&D of the utilization of natural gas to produce hydrogen, but one of the components of there is to work with private industry in that R&D. I don't think we should, there's things that, I'm just adding that dimension, that we could partner with other players in the world, whether it's other nation groups or whether it's other corporations, or that partnership ability to, because we have the resource and some of these other people have the technology that's under development. And so I'm thinking of a holistic approach here on that, just tossing that out.
Yeah.
I'm not sure. Yeah, can you hear me?
Yeah.
Am I muted? Okay. Not sure if it fits in incentives and subsidies. I don't know if I agree with R&D generally, but I'm not sure if we need to be incentivizing or subsidizing in our group. That's a high priority. And also, if this is really about hydrogen, there are active projects in the state around, renewables to hydrogen and different colors of hydrogen. So it's weird to limit it to natural gas. There's nuclear to hydrogen, there's renewable to hydrogen, there's all sorts of things. So renewables or other processes. This one's an odd one for me.
And you guys are the chairs. How does that fit in with your view of incentives and subsidies? I mean, it's R&D. I think the task is important for a consideration and an overarching plan, but where does that fit with incentives and subsidies? I'm trying to, you made something click here,
on how it fits in with what our focus is.
Yeah, but I mean, so I just broadened it out to be about everything R&D. I mean, R&D, to the extent that it's supported by state or federal government or local effects, for that matter, I mean, it could be a form of incentive and subsidy, right? To federal or state funds flow to a university or private sector hub or something to evaluate. I mean, it's a longer-term investment, but if it leads to lower-cost energy, then, you know, that's how I would kind of make the linkage.
So like an NREL lab hydrogen center in Alaska or something to that. I mean, the world of possible.
Yeah. Yeah, or funding for ASAP, pick a thing, right?
That's where I'm trying. I think you're helping me with the incentive and subsidies, and so it's not only partner and support, but it's partner with federal and private opportunities to assist Alaska R&D.
Yep.
I'm just trying to go back to Isaac's thing: is where does it fit in, and how does it work?
Yeah.
If I may, sorry. One thing I've seen successful with research and development is kind of funding pilot programs. So I'm not sure if that's something you might want to consider adding to that.
Yeah, or if we could use the word demonstration projects, and then this could be RD, and we could add the deployment on the end of our R&D, do research and development and deployment. That would work.
So it's deployment, add a word?
Research and development and deployment, which is a thing out there.
Got it.
Yeah, it's not just R&D for R&D's sake. It's for actually creating something that's a working model or something that's tangible that produces results from it. The R&D and deployment.
Okay. Well, we can maybe that would make me feel better too, Michael, in terms of where we're at. Like if we went back through and added words to some of these actions to help us think through exactly what we mean by these, that could be some work that we do this week. Energy technology pilot programs. That seems fine.
Yeah, I'm strongly in the camp of demonstration versus pilot because pilots just oftentimes just don't go anywhere. And what we're trying to do here is make real impact. So wherever possible, I'm always cheerleading for using the word demonstration over pilots.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
You can end up with metrics that can show value, right?
Right. And they can lead to actual commercial things happening. And they're, you know, they take into account economics in a way that pilots don't really.
And I think you just added a good word that's going in some of these commercialization, demonstration to commercialization. The word commercialization is going to grab people. Why are we investing in this rather than just R&D? So I like your word commercialization added in there, but where it can be flavored into these document into these actions descriptions.
Mm-hmm. And I just had a quick follow-up. I know we're focusing on the action description. Are the other columns associated with these okay in terms of timeline, lead organization, partners, and collaborators?
I think we should look at those at the end. I mean, there's out of this whole list, there's only three that are short and three that are long or something like that. I mean, because the easy button is medium. And I don't know, I think we want to do a better job of orienting each of these kind of individually, like when should we hope to achieve them and in relation to each other. And I'd really like to see almost a flowchart of how these actions link up over time. And that might help us identify missing pieces too. The only other thing I would say in terms of partners and collaborators, as soon as we start listing those, it's an incomplete list. And that's, I mean, from a public or stakeholder engagement process, like that's where you'll get the most feedback. You know, a long list of who else needs to be involved. And so I would worry kind of maybe in terms of where we leave that. I mean, a lead organization makes sense to me, but otherwise keep it broad.
And I have had the similar concerns with implementation time frame. I mean, if you say medium, 5 to 10 years, someone could read this and say, well, we don't have to worry about this for 5 years, or just kicks the can. What I'm looking at is, instead of an implementation timeline, is something where it's an action item that is accomplished in 5 years. You know, what is the goal date of the actual deliverable, as opposed to implementation time frame, which means or could imply that somebody else's responsibility and takes away the ownership.
Or we could make a big SOPO. We could do some milestones and objectives and dates, and we could do a Gantt chart. Oh, Michael, this is going to be
I'm not trying to get into the weeds there, but I think implementation action is or deliverable is what I want to focus on, because the governor was really clear. How do we get down? And I don't want to give him, oh, well, we got the strategy to do a strategy to implement. Right. I'm looking for something that, bam, you know, 5 years we're going to have this partner. 10 years is realistic for us to have this. But maybe some of these actions are immediate to start now for that deliverable.
Yep.
Okay. It's just a function of the chart, which is really good. It helps us plan, but I'm just putting my 2 cents on.
We can definitely add to the chart. I just want to keep in mind we asked about the timeline. So.
Yeah, right.
Yeah.
Well, in your earlier worksheet had more columns, right? So this is a pared-down version.
It did.
Just trying to get us to focus.
Yeah.
I get it.
Yeah, the timeline on the demonstration one, though, I feel like those could both be moved up to short term. So I think there's a lot going on there already, and yeah, so.
Okay.
Want to save ourselves some work.
Okay. Let's keep going. So this natural gas infrastructure, I mean, clearly this is an economic development plan, so folks are focused on this topic. In this group around incentives and subsidies, I mean, do we want to be source agnostic? Or is there, I mean, if we're thinking about where to put incentives in, or focus subsidies and incentives, and I think in this case, incentives, what does that look like? Is it, are we picking natural gas, or, I mean, there's been just as much talk more recently on nuclear. How should we think about this topic?
I think we should think about it in terms of, we have a limited amount of money to spend as a state, and where are we, what kinds of infrastructure is going to get us to 10 cent power in the cheapest and most realistic and shortest timeline way. I mean, I don't know, I would pull back the aperture on this a little bit and just have it be more of a evaluation of energy infrastructure or something, or just let the Rail Belt Reliability Council do its IRP work to figure out, its integrated resource planning work to figure out, at least for the Rail Belt, what kind of infrastructure it needs to, you know, makes the most economic sense. I don't know. This one just feels like we need to have a little bit of extra time to think about which energy infrastructure actually brings down our costs while still being safe and resilient.
And I think the key word is locally based, because what you're going to get in Metlakatla isn't the same in Fairbanks or in Nome.
Yeah. And so that broadens it out to energy infrastructure related to supply that is based in Alaska, or community adjacent or local. So maybe that feels better.
Yeah, and I would also put the cost, build energy infrastructure that increases or optimizes locally based supply, leveraging public and private investment to lower cost. I want to see that lower cost there, because I love hydropower, but I've seen hydropower proposals that actually are cheaper than diesel. And, you know, I know you love it, and I know it's cool, but it's not getting us to the nirvana we're trying to get to.
Right. Yeah, you could have locally based, that's really expensive. So,
yeah, and therefore a transmission line to that community may be cheaper, right, even though you really like your local resource.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah. All right.
I mean, a way to address this also is just to, I mean, I don't know if that's a policy and regulation thing, but to require the state to consider all sources of energy when building new infrastructure and go for low cost, when making those evaluations,
mm-hmm,
with a bar for safety and, you know, resilience, of course, across all energy sources, but we should really be requiring ourselves to choose the lowest cost source of energy anytime we build stuff. If the state dollars are involved.
It's almost like a procurement process or, you know, RFP merit criteria where you've got these rankings and weighting around, is it low cost? Is it locally based? Is it clean? Like those could be three levels of analysis that for every
life cycle.
And life cycle,
because some projects are going to be very expensive in year 1 through 3, but year 20, they're this slam dunk on the cost because of the nature of the energy resource.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So, you know, a lot of people want to make the decision on what is the cost today, and that's kind of short-sighted when you're looking at the long term of how that's going to affect the schools or the community buildings or whatever 3 years down the road.
That's, and the sort of reciprocal to that is, you know, you might have a supply that's cheap at the beginning, but it doesn't have a long term staying power, if you will, right? So you only got 5 years of supply.
Yeah, and I noticed in some of this increased statewide energy plan, I saw 100 years. So I'm trying to also incorporate where this is going. It's not just the here and now.
Yeah. I just made this isn't fully fleshed out, but just a note for us, maybe.
Yeah, another term to throw out here is just levelized cost of energy, which is an approach to try to get at some of this. You could just suggest that we use the levelized cost of energy anytime we're making decisions about infrastructure, energy infrastructure in the state. I mean, it's focused largely on electricity, but if our view is that these systems are going towards electricity, I think it's a useful tool for us to evaluate things on an apples-to-apples comparison.
Mm-hmm. We'll dig into that. We'll probably have to explain ourselves at some point. But
I know. A little wonky.
Add that there. Cool. C-PACE we have, right?
Yeah.
Not enough of it, or...
Yeah. Can I add on this? I've actually drafted it, ready for ordinance for Juneau CPACE, so I've had my hands involved with this. Our CPACE program was basically a cut and paste from Texas. I'm not necessarily thinking it is the best for us, and so I think it needs to be tweaked. I would also add on there a subcomponent of that, which is not just the commercial property, but on-bill financing, where utilities actually offer or communities offer incentives to reduce energy costs. For example, USDA is now requiring on all its loans to utilities that they consider an on-bill financing program to, let's say, buy an air source heat pump for your ratepayers, those kinds of things. So I do think the CPACE program, while it's really good, it's initial, and I think it needs to be tweaked for effectiveness for robustly across the state. It is very tedious to implement.
That's what was the financing term that you used? Include
on bill financing.
Okay.
So where commercial property is where you do the abatement of your tax base, on bill financing is a utility based, and we don't have clear incentives and subsidies and legislation on bill financing, which is some parts related to the residential component of commercial property.
I just want to add that currently CPACE has only been passed in Anchorage. So it is something that AEA is kind of looking at too, to see if we can find some federal funding to sort of have a person here who's helping other municipalities get CPACE passed in their cities to make it, you know, wider spread. But right now, only Anchorage has passed a resolution for it. So it is pretty small at this point in time.
Yeah. And is that because the mechanism is at the local level? Is it, it's property tax related, right?
Right.
I think the Mat-Su Borough either passed or is close to passing it. I have a question, what's the action that state is doing here? Because it's been implemented at the state level. Now it's up to local governments to implement and pass at their own city council assembly level. So what is this group saying the state should exactly do on CPACE to get it more widely adopted? I guess staffing or?
I think at AEA we were just thinking having someone to help facilitate other cities roll it out. But we don't really have a plan on that yet, but that's sort of what we've been discussing internally, to have a point person here who can help cities who want to implement it, because it is a little cumbersome.
And it is cumbersome, and that's where I was just saying that my two cents of looking at it from the City and Borough of Juneau sitting on the Juneau Commission on Sustainability, and the exact wording that needs to go into each ordinance and resolution, the time frames to implement, it is not an easy safe to crack, although it has great benefits at the end of that rainbow. And all I'm trying to say is one of the actions is what could we do to help incentivize communities to get this by either streamlining or making some movement on modifying the steps to do exactly that so that it's more well received and more communities are implementing it.
Yeah. It's also, we should be clear that the state has its own property tax, too, and could be implementing this at the state level through its oil and gas property tax. So anywhere where pipeline infrastructure or other oil and gas activity takes place, the state could have a CPACE program. So there might be some state nexus that we haven't actually been looking at.
Maybe that's a note that you can just add to the action, further explore state nexus.
There's billions of dollars, just so you guys know, or just for situation awareness, there is billions of dollars worth of property in America underneath CPACE. So it can have big impacts. Community solar, putting whatever on commercial properties. There's a lot of states are very active with this. So it's an opportunity.
It would be pretty interesting if the state leveraged its oil and gas property tax, where it's not local, to facilitate clean and lower cost energy in Alaska. Tying those two things together might be, has some interesting potential. Looks good at the very least. All right, Green Bank, that's easy done, right? Almost.
There's legislation. It has not passed yet. I believe it's in the Finance Committee, so it'll be taken up next session.
So let's at least move it to short, since it's already moving. And is it right that it's only available for energy efficiency projects?
I don't know. I'll have to look at the bill. I don't think it's only energy efficiency, but it's been a while, so I don't know what it looks like right now. I'll take a look.
Okay. Thanks, Karen.
And maybe worth adding community scale. I mean, it's really, just to clarify, it's really supposed to be, 500 heat pumps for a community, setting up a program so that a bunch of people can access it. It's not really meant to be an individual homeowner or an individual.
It's not like residential solar or something. Okay. And where does the capital come from?
Well, I think they're hoping for initial, amount from the state, but then after that, they're very, very quality loans that the bank makes, and so institutional investors come in after that, and it's a good structure.
Mm-hmm. My understanding of energy efficiency projects in the main are that the savings from the savings generated from these projects is what ultimately amortizes the project.
Yeah, I think that's
right. I don't know what I just want to throw this out because I really don't want to expand on the action items, but on this on-bill financing, there's several provinces in Canada where the utilities are responsible, but it's a state program or it's a provincial program where they loan energy efficiency upgrades, solar roofs, air source heat pumps at 0% interest, but they use the utility to collect the money back at your flat rate at 0%. So there's a utility state or a utility province relationship of trying to move and lower the cost of heating and other energy period, by making things work. And I just saw that was very interesting of what they're doing in northern reaches of Canada.
Mm-hmm. Maybe that's,
it's an HFC kind of similar to what HFC did earlier version, but maybe, a modification of the version. Where it's actually dedicated to lowering your cost of energy.
Okay, great. Increase the PCE reimbursement from 500 kilowatt to 750 kilowatt hours.
There's the no exaction status. We changed that to implemented.
Yeah. For incentives and subsidies, this is definitely a subsidy. There has been research though around this, and one, it's not broadly applicable for those households who use less than 500 kilowatt hours. It hasn't substantially improved their condition. It's just where there are larger uses, they have access now. So, I don't know that we need it here right now as it's currently formed, but we might want to be thinking about, is there something more that we want to, that PCE is for, related to incentives and subsidies. We've talked about leveraging what's available with the community facilities. Andrew's brought up, could it better bring down the costs of living in rural Alaska by being more broadly applicable or having more eligibility related to it. So I don't think it's right as currently framed, but we want to maybe keep that in mind.
I don't know where the rural groups are or the rural subcommittee is, but, there's tweaking of PC programs. So let's say a school wants to put solar on top of its roof to help decrease the school costs. And sometimes there's pushback from the local utility because now there's less kilowatts to spread over that PC and others. So I'm just trying to wonder if there's, my goal would be to optimize and reduce that friction so that we're all rowing the canoe together to lower the cost of energy in the community. And I don't know I don't know enough to provide specifics, but I want to make sure that we're helping the governor lower the cost of energy. If we have, I think we should increase the PCE to 750. I think the average Alaskan uses 1,000, okay, when you're not in the rural. So I think there's a quality of life aspect really at play here, but I'm also trying to ensure that PC doesn't become a barrier toward, or that the rules of the PCE might or could become a barrier to other reductions of energy cost. And so I know that's very vague, but that's what I'm trying to capture.
Yeah.
Okay.
I put some new words in there. Just, yeah.
Okay. Sorry. This is also a topic that's come up on the statutes and regs subcommittee.
And in rural, I know it's on their list in some form. So.
And I would just add, Nils, if I could, because we're incentives and subsidies, that after evaluate PC reimbursement, and then is, you know, what could be the incentives or subsidies? I mean, there's levers that we can play in incentivizing what I would call proactive behavior to reduce energy costs.
Yeah. And I would say for the record, I mean, the intent of this is not to reduce the value of the subsidy for communities that depend on it. So I don't think that's what we're talking about.
No.
I think we're looking at how do we make sure that we're driving toward lower cost energy overall.
Yeah, I agree. And my word for what you're saying is value added.
Yeah. Great. We just got a few minutes. Left federal grants for workforce training. And I think the only thing I would note is that this is focused on electric and hydrogen vehicles, and probably we want it to be broader than that. Any questions there?
Definitely broader, yeah.
Yeah, broader. And I think we should also include part of the partners and collaborators are organized labor in the state. That's impacted by that workforce training, since they do a lot of training already.
Yeah, reskilling.
Well, I was talking to Doug Tance, the IBW, and I said, you know, the future is so bright for your apprentices. You know, you need to start issuing sunglasses in your classes. You know, if the beneficial.
I was hoping you were gonna get to needing some shades. I like that.
Yeah. Future's so bad, you got to wear shades.
We can come back to these, but at least it says more of what we want. I mean, clean energy development, we talked about this deployment, we talked about this last week. I mean, great, but how? And really for incentives and subsidies, it's about identifying the resources that will lead to this deployment.
Lower cost.
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, we have bandied about a low-interest fund that would be a way to do this from an incentives perspective, which is separate from CPACE. It's a different type of project, but I don't know if we've included elsewhere here, but a, you know, 4% or 0% debt facility that could participate in projects to provide some of the debt for utility scale renewable projects in the state would be hugely beneficial. That would draw a lot of tax equity providers or just in, you know, renewable investors into projects in the state.
You know, and I don't know. I know we're limited on time, but you know, I had discussions with Jigar Shah, who's in charge of the DOE loan program, and. You know, I don't know, and it isn't legislatively all right now, but what if DOE said we're going to give X project an interest rate of 5% because that's the current rate? Could the state, in its infinite wisdom, subsidize that another 1% to get it to economically viable? And I think those kind of partnerships between loan programs with the state and with the federal for like an interest match or other matching could help accelerate projects in Alaska. And I don't know how to capture that in this clean energy deployment, but I think it's worth exploring.
Yeah. Probably a lot of ideas in that little box, and we need to flesh them out, but I know we've talked about some of those. Maybe they're up further above us too, but at least we're getting to how we would do clean energy deployment. And maybe what we mean is just to add a qualifier there. Everybody wants a statewide energy plan. Isn't that what we're doing?
You're on it.
In progress. In progress.
Great. Energy incentives program study. We've talked about this. That's also what we're doing. Maybe it's an expanded version of this. Federal grants for retrofits. Anything more we need to say there? Sorry for typing in your ear.
I don't know if you can actually hear it.
Good. It's not for how silent I'm typing, because I feel really loud. Oh, look, we're back to R&D. I think we might have covered this earlier, aligning. I mean, here we're talking about university research. Maybe
that could be combined, or yeah. I think we should leave it up to you, Nils, if that should be combined or removed, but you can take some of that language and move it up with the other incentive.
Yeah, and I think from an energy and incentives perspective, it's doing aggressive R&D on technologies that we're going to need in 10 and 20 years. Like, I would argue maybe nuclear fits into that realm, although it might be more near term than that, or tidal or sources of long-term storage, or, you know, that I feel like that's where we need to get as a state, is getting R&D aligned with what we are going to need in 10 or 15 or 20 years. That's the role of R&D today.
Okay. And I know we're running out of time, but I want to throw this out because this is a suggestion I made at the governor's conference to some people with the labs. You know, we have a cold weather center that tests every piece of military equipment our government produces in Alaska. We could be having the same R&D lab for every electric vehicle, every Hitachi piece of equipment that's coming out that's electrical. How does it work in cold weather? You know, this is a new thing that's coming out, and I do think that there's an R&D opportunity of Alaska, and that cold weather for electric vehicles is just one subset. But I think we have a unique opportunity, because when I was looking at where electric vehicles are tested in Europe, they sent them to a northern place in Sweden and let them freeze. And I think we have that opportunity here in America. But I just throw that in there with the R&D components. I think we have a bread basket of opportunity for those kind of working with the federal government, whether it's the federal transmission, transportation agencies and other. So I just wanted to share that.
Okay. I mean, this last one I think is covered elsewhere. So I'm just gonna, just around hydroelectric, I put it here, and it's covered under some of the other clean energy stuff.
Yeah, and I would just say on there, I don't like the only thing I don't like is the long term. Hydropower is a 10-year incubation process for all the permitting and licensing and whatnot. So, you know, it's a really a shorter time thing. But if you want to put that in with up above where we have all the other energies, I think that's fine, because I think we should be agnostic. It depends on the region.
Good.
I would just add in their hydropower, I want to ensure, because the NHA, the National Hydropower Association, is coming September 13th to Alaska. Hydropower underneath the national level is also includes tidal and hydrokinetic. I don't know if everyone realizes that, but the National Hydropower Association advocates for all forms of hydropower, which is tidal, in-stream hydrokinetic, other forms of hydrokinetic. So, you know, that is... When you say hydropower, I want to make sure we're using the full breadbasket of that spectrum of what that means. Because a hydropower we see as a dam, but it could also be that in-stream electrical generation. And I'll just share that, you know, I share with people nationally that hydrokinetic was invented in Alaska. I have references where a guy took a salmon wheel on the Yukon River and put a generator to it in the 20s and 30s so he could have some light bulbs. So, we were leading even back then in hydrokinetic.
Yeah, good. Thanks, Steph. Michael, I hid 33 and 34, and then it turns out that my Explorer on-bill financing is at 496, so I don't know what happened between 34 and 496, but okay. I'll let you figure it out.
And can you, are you sending this to me? Because I don't think this is the live version that's on SharePoint.
Yeah, I clicked on the link that was in the, but yeah, I'll send it to you.
Okay.
Cool. I will send that to you. All that formatting work that I did, you're going to have to bring back in. I'm sorry. I did my best.
No, it's fine.
Cool. It gives me something to do while I'm thinking. All right. Well, we've got all day session tomorrow. Great for those of you able to attend that. And then there's the solar farm thing after. Perfect. Is that right?
Cool. What time is that meeting? What time does that meeting start tomorrow? Is it 9 or 10, or is it earlier?
Like 10 to 2.
Yeah, 10 to 2. When you said all day, I wanted to make sure I wasn't missing a new send out.
Well, I'll be online, but enjoy. Hopefully the rain is lessened.
Well, I just want to say thanks to both you chairs for allowing me to participate in this. I appreciate that. Thank you.
Thanks for your input, Doug. Thanks, everyone.
Yeah. Thanks, Isaac. Thanks, everybody.
Yeah.